Stephanie Gillard, the Producing Artistic Director at American Stage. Welcome to Spotlight, the American Stage podcast, where we illuminate the artistry and ideas behind the stories.
Hi, I'm Kristen Clippard, and I'm the Associate Artistic Director here at American Stage. And I am so thrilled to be bringing you the very first podcast episode of our reimagined 2020-2021 season. And this year's first offering is Letters to Kamala by Rachel Lynette. And what follows is a conversation between myself and the cast and the playwright about the play and its characters, who are women of firsts, women of color who were trailblazers, activists, politicians, who paved the way for future generations, and what that means to us today in our current political moment in our country. Let's listen in.
Hi, my name is Kristen Clippard, and I'm the Associate Artistic Director here at American Stage. And today, we are talking with the cast and the playwright of our upcoming production of Letters to Kamala. And we are so excited to be delving into who these women are and what the story is about, and give you a little bit more insight into what the show is. So we're going to start off with some introductions. So Rachel, I'm going to kick it to you first.
I am Rachel Lynette. I'm in Madison, Wisconsin, and I am the playwright of Letters to Kamala.
Hi, I'm Mia Tagano. I'm in Belmont, California, which is just south of San Francisco, and I play Patsy Mink.
Hi, I'm Dee Selmore. I am in Tallahassee, Florida, and I play Charlotta Bass.
Hi, I'm Renata Eastlick. I am in Tampa, Florida, and I play Charlene Mitchell.
Excellent. I'm so excited to have you all here today. And to be launching our reimagined season with a show that is focusing in on women of color and leadership positions throughout history and what they have come to bear on where we are now in this political moment and in this moment for our country is so exciting. To be examining the lives of female politicians from the past during this very, very important lead up to an election, it feels like a really good opportunity to talk about what it looks like to be a strong civic leader. And particularly, what does it take to be a woman in politics? And I want to start us off with just a couple of stats, which I find really, really interesting. In 2020, 127 women serve in the US Congress, 26 women serve in the Senate, and 101 women in the House. And of those 127 women serving in the 116th U.S. Congress, 48 are women of color, and that's about 38%. And women of color constitute about 9% of the total 535 members of Congress. So those are some interesting numbers to kind of just look at where we are and where we stand as far as women of color representing us in government. Women running for office is not a new thing, but having a multiracial woman who identifies as Indian, African American, and Asian American selected as the vice president nominee is incredibly significant. And some have said that Kamala Harris was the first, but as the play will come to show us, there were lots of important women that came before her, and we're going to hear from three of them in particular. And they each made their own contributions to civil rights and appear in the story to reflect on what their experiences taught them about being a woman of color in government and in the public sphere. So Rachel, I wanna start off with you and ask if you could tell us a little bit about how the idea for the play came about and the premise around having Kamala Harris asking her ancestors advice and that really quintessential question of what do you do? How can you mend a country's broken heart? And why that question specifically?
Yeah, so I got the play started because I got a phone call from Stephanie that was one of those like really fun out of field phone calls where Stephanie was like, we really want to work with you and we'd like a play that kind of is about the election, but not, and that we're in a really historic moment right now and we'd like to capture this theatrically. And so we both just kind of brainstormed off of each other. And then I remember saying that I was really interested in the fact that Kamala Harris is, like you said, a multicultural woman. And I wanted to explore like, what if you have ancestors or people that you look up to, who would be some people she might look up to? And so I remember pitching Charlotta Bass, Charlene Mitchell, and Patsy Mink. as three women that she might want to look up to. And I wanted to ask a question that I thought could be bipartisan. And a question that for me is, I think no matter what side of you're on, is it's pretty obvious that the country's divided. And I think any politician who's going to be our next whatever has to deal with how do you unite the country and what does that look like? And so, because, you know, writing, you get to have a little bit of poetic license. I just changed that to a broken heart instead of how do you unite the country?
Well, the fact that that division is felt so deeply on all sides from all corners is so prevalent right now. And so the fact that the main question that Kamala has to pose to these people are, how do we unify? How do we mend? How do we heal out of this moment? Yeah. Where did you come up with that question, Rachel?
I like to think that my heart's pretty broken. So it came from a personal place of just when I think about where we are as a country, I'm pretty broken by it. And I think about like how much hope I've had in past elections, regardless, and just knowing that it'll all be okay and not feeling that way lately. And so I guess I just needed to answer the question even for myself of like, what does a brokenhearted nation look like and how do you try to make something better?
Well, thank you for that. It's really interesting to hear the genesis of an idea and how it begins to grow. And you did a lot of research about these women too. So it's exciting to see what parts of them you've chosen to sort of focus on and pull out in the story.
Yeah, it was really fun. There wasn't a lot of time. So it was just kind of like, what can I learn very quickly about all three of these women? I knew a little bit, I'm lucky that I knew a little bit about each one already that I was using as a kind of a jumping board. But I think like learning their legacies of what they've done that still exists today was kind of a big driving factor for me as I was doing my research of like what like groundwork did they lay for us that we're still building on and how can we like show that we're going to keep building on it. And so that's kind of what focused my research. I probably did too much research, as you saw in the earlier drafts. It was just like I just copy and pasted from CNN in one section that's no longer there. So it was also another part was really fun of like knowing so much information, but still keeping it dramatically compelling.
Yeah. That theme of legacy and what change they were able to affect during their time and what lasted after their time. Yeah. Because Dee and Renata and Mia, you all can speak to specifically different parts of these women that you find to be really outstanding and to be really emblematic of their contributions. So I would love to put it to you three. What qualities about your pioneering woman stand out to you the most? Anyone like to start us off?
Sure, I will. This is Renata. And as a friendly reminder, I play Charlene Mitchell. And she was definitely unrelenting in her activism and persistence. And I will admit, I didn't know that she basically spearheaded the campaign to free Angela Davis, along with a few contemporaries of hers, right? And I recently saw a tribute to Charlene, I think it was either done at the Brooklyn College or maybe it was a convention where Angela Davis said, I have never known anyone as consistent in her values, as collective in her outlook on life, and as firm in her trajectory as a freedom fighter. And I love that, you know. She also said that the relative lack of celebrity Charlene has today in comparison to some of her contemporaries and the civil rights leaders is absolutely no indication of the impact that her work has had. And I definitely agree with that 100%. And Rachel Lynette does such a good job of showcasing that in the character of Charlene. So I'm excited to be able to be a part of this and see what the audience will think and how they'll react to women that maybe they didn't know anything about, or maybe they knew a little bit about, and now they're learning more information and getting to know them as deep as we are. So it's cool.
I'll take over from there. I'm Dee and I'm playing Charlotta Bass. And what I think is, what I love finding out about her, well, first of all, I didn't know she existed. So I loved finding out that this woman, and she has such a rich history too. She's done so much that it was, I felt kind of bad that I didn't know, but it was fun and educational finding out as much as possible about her. What I love about her is her education and her bravery that she displayed numerous times throughout her life doing different things. She had her own newspaper and was the first Black woman to have a newspaper that she ran, she was in charge of. She was the first nominee for VP under the Progressive Party. And I was trying to find as much as possible about her, and it was a little disheartening that there wasn't as much as I had hoped that there would be, or that I feel like there should be, knowing all that she's accomplished, knowing all that she accomplished, and like the groundwork that she laid for the rest of us who are, you know, like I like to say, making moves today, you know. But she's a very interesting woman, and a woman I think that, much like Kamala, is a woman that we would do well to emulate. I'll say it there. I'll leave it there.
Hey there, this is Mia Tagano, and I'm Patsy Mink in this play. And the truth is, I didn't know any of these women, and that's sad. So it made me really think about my history, education. But what has been so amazing is getting to know these women. And also, I hear you, Rachel. I've been feeling kind of a sadness around the state of the world. And as a Japanese American fourth generation, and I actually, sometimes I feel like we put ourselves in boxes by having to lead with one of the countries. I'm multicultured. Patsy was third generation Japanese. And from Hawaii. She is someone who, her father was an engineer and top engineer, and still couldn't get a job. They would give, or get a leadership job, be given to a Caucasian man. And yet she didn't let that stop her. She didn't let her upbringing or her roots or she didn't come from a lot of money or fame or anything. She kept going, this persevering, this sense of this fire, this sense of I have to do something. There's an internal drive with all these women, and it gives me hope. And whenever I feel like lately where I feel, I don't know what's going on, why people are so mean to each other. Or when I feel afraid to go outside or to interact with certain people, I think about these women who did that regardless. That they had fear, but they led with their bravery. They didn't lead with their fear. And I think that's pretty exciting. And they made change on a big scale. So they were visionaries. Patsy was, I'm speaking for my character, but I just love all of them. I'm learning from, but the sense of, it wasn't just about them. It was about something bigger than them. And it was encompassing the whole United States. And they really did believe in a better America. So it's exciting to be part of this.
I love that you use the word drive too. Like that seems to be something that is very, very strong in each of them. As you said, Mia, like there's a really, really deep purpose that drives each of them in their individual causes. So Rachel, when you were researching these women, was there anything that you were looking for in particular, or was there anything that surprised you as you were starting your process?
I think because of my personal politics, the person who surprised me the least was Charlene, and also made her the easiest to write, which there was a funny comment in rehearsal about how many lines she has, and I was laughing on the other side of just like, yeah, I know, I'm sorry. The person that surprised me the most was actually, and I learned about Patsy Mink in school, actually, in California. So the person who surprised me the most was, I had never before this heard of Charlotta Bass. I had heard of Charlene Mitchell, And I had heard of Patsy Mink, but I'd never heard of Charlotta Bass. And then there's that story that's in the play where she was working late and a group of men from the KKK came outside threatening to kill her. And she came out with a gun to show them away. And she didn't know what else to do. And what she says in the interviews is that she doesn't even know how to shoot a gun. She's not even sure if it was loaded. And so she was so thankful that it worked. And so that was something really, I don't know, if it's surprising and interesting to me, just like the ways in which that survival mode kicks in. But also just reading a lot about that Charlotta was a Republican initially and thinking about how much her parties have changed over time. I learned a lot. I didn't know anything about her, but I learned a lot more about Charlotta as this process went on.
I think that's going to be an interesting thing for a lot of people who watch the show is to see who they were familiar with or who they learned about in school. Or that's an interesting thing to bring up. Renata, I'm curious to ask about in the story, as it unfolds and as we hear from each of the women, we hear each one of them sort of address obstacles and things that they had to overcome in their careers in order to get the work done. Things such as stereotypes and trappings of being a BIPOC woman of color in a leadership role. And I'm wondering if you could speak about what one of those might've been for Charlene.
Definitely. I think part of the problem and the reason why I think stereotypes still persist is due to a lack of awareness that stereotypes actually still exist, as well as a lack of understanding of the Black woman's experience or the BIPOC woman's experience. And real talk, a lot of stereotypes are based on fear, right? It's the idea that because something is different and I don't quite understand it, I will then allow fear to take over me and reject that thing or make fun of that person or their experience because I just can't relate. And unfortunately, that's how stereotypes start and begin, and that's how they become harmful. For example, there's a beautiful term that's used in the play, strong Black woman. It is something that is often said, but I think that it can be easily misused. And don't get me wrong, you know, Black women are strong. Women in general are incredibly strong, hello, and resilient. And I love it when someone says that they're a strong Black woman. However, I do believe that when it's not used carefully or by a Black woman speaking to another Black woman, this narrative, so to speak, can definitely create a somewhat controlling image that could potentially perpetuate the idea that it's okay and acceptable to mistreat Black women because, you know, oh, well, she can handle that. She can handle this, you know, and if not careful, that narrative can easily become a form of silencing the Black woman's voice. And many times when Black women go through things in life, they often can tell us or silence us. And it just because, you know, oh, well, they're strong, they can deal with it, instead of actually having actions that are taken to solve the situation or to talk about the situation. And what I love about Charlene Mitchell, in her entire career, she shows that she is a pillar of strength, okay? And she always, always, always made a point to have her voice be heard. And I truly admire and love that about her. Charlene is an encouragement for Black women who fear expressing their emotions, and a true example of fighting for what you believe in, no matter how hard things get. So I think that's how Rachel has really woven some beautiful moments, you know, based on truth. And perhaps some is like a little bit of fiction and storytelling of being a good playwright. But I really do see that, yes, Charlene and all of these women, Patsy and Charlotta, they go through these moments of stereotypes and traps created in the world that we have, because it's a flawed world and it's not perfect. And we're imperfect human beings just trying to struggle one day at a time to be better people. But it's really cool to see what these women have done and how they've fought their way to where they've gotten, you know, and what they were able to achieve. I mean, Charlene ran for president of the United States. So a lot of people don't know that, and they'll find out, you know, so it's cool. Sorry, spoiler alert, but I hope that answers your question.
Absolutely. It's interesting to see what choices we get to make as creators and as artists and writers about doing a, you know, a play about a real person and what we choose to latch on and what we choose to highlight and bring forward more in our storytelling. So that I love that you talk specifically about what you're really drawn to. And I want to throw it to Mia now to talk a little bit about Patsy Mink, because, you know, the Patsy that we have rendered is such a diplomat, and she speaks so strongly and so well about her accomplishments and about her work around Title IX and all of her work to help mothers and women in the workplace and things of that nature. So I'm wondering, if Patsy were around today — it's a little bit of a whimsical question — but if she were helping folks who were preparing for this election that we're in 2020, if she would have any words of advice, because there's been a lot of talk right now about really having a voting plan and really, really putting your energy behind getting ready to do your civic duty this year, because it's that important. So I'm wondering what you feel like Patsy might have to say about that.
Well, I think she would say vote early if you vote by mail-in ballot. I think she would say not to follow emotions, but to follow your intelligence. There's something about that, about following your guts, and that remember, like, what has happened before and where we are now and the difference. It feels like we have gone back in time. A lot of things, a lot of our ancestors, a lot of the things that Charlene and Charlotta and Patsy were fighting for, Martin Luther King, you wonder what happened. Why are we going back now? So just remember that. And then vote. Don't just not vote. And don't be discouraged that way. I mean, we have people in California that will say, well, it's going to go one way, because they're looking at San Francisco or LA. Well, we're a huge state. And we need everyone to vote. Also, we need to vote because our great grandparents weren't allowed to vote. You know, and so that's, we have to do that. And when I hear about people who say, I don't vote ever, I've never voted. There's someone who said, he's like 60, 70 years old. And he said, it didn't matter to me to vote. And he's a person of color. And I said, well, I didn't say it. I just thought it. It seems to be disrespectful to your ancestors. So I think about I think Patsy would think about her family too. So yeah, vote, get out and vote.
I think the sad part about recording a podcast on Zoom is that the audience does not get to see all the head nods and the snaps and the claps and the things in the chat that are like, yes, yes, yes. Oh, thank you for that. Thank you. Yeah, so vote, period. Yes, is the message there. Dee, I would love to ask you, because you have the unique perspective of being a poll worker and actually being on the front lines of the democratic process. And so I would love to ask you, what is that like, and what does it mean to you to be exploring the women who came before Kamala Harris?
I love it. I love it. It is exciting and satisfying. I like that. You know, I have worked the elections as a poll worker since the primaries before Obama's second run, and it's become like my, you know, it's become my I don't want to say battle cry, but my thing is like, you have to vote. And one of the things in this play is that, you know, we don't always agree with each other, you know, and that's how I feel, you know, the same way, you know, when I'm sitting in that booth, we may not agree, but I'm going to protect your right to be here, you know, and to do, you know, do what I can to help facilitate this process. And in my particular district, in my polling place, primarily African-American community. And we have like, when I'm working, I'm sitting underneath a picture of Fannie Lou Hamer and John Lewis's mugshot, you know, and I'm like, there's this strange like sense of pride and just, you know, like I said, exciting and satisfying, because it's like, people are coming and coming and coming, and we're like, oh, we're not going to get that many this year. We're not going to have that many voters. And then they show up in numbers, and it's like, it's very, I don't know. It just feels so good, knowing that I get to help in this way. And that it's not all in vain, that the things that like we talk about the groundwork that was laid before you, that the things that people did for us to have the right to vote is not all in vain. People are coming, they're showing up. I had the great experience of, Florida just gave felonies, their voting rights back. And, three young men came in and they were so nervous and they didn't know what they were doing and what have you. And just to, one of them wasn't able to vote at that time because he hadn't registered properly. So just to help him get registered, the smile on his face, like it makes you feel so good. I don't really know what to say. I'm getting a little emotional, but it's just a great, great experience. And I'm glad to be a part and to be a part of this that talks about this.
Thank you, Dee. Thank you for putting in that work and doing that. It is important. It is important. I want to start to wrap up our time with posing a last question to each of you. And it is, how do you think this story can enlighten us about the journey of BIPOC women who are stepping out for change these days? What do you think you're hoping for the audience to take away?
Girl, you just got deep. this is Renata, by the way, since it is a podcast. Honestly, I hope that people with this place see the humanity and the love that these women have and the fight that they had, and have the fight. They're all incredible women. They all did amazing things that many of us would have never known about had we either not seen this play or been a part of the play. And I think, out of anything, I want people to see the humanity and to notice that we're not all that different, that we all struggle. We may struggle in different ways, but we all struggle. And that we are all fighting for the things that we love and care about, and that those things matter, that you matter, that, we matter, you matter, your voice matters, where you're from matters, your background matters, and that is a part of who you are. And Rachel says, she has a beautiful line, I will not spoil it, but it really, really just pinpoints that it's a part of who you are, where you came from, where you were born, the house you were living in, the cities you've lived in, that creates who you are and the reasons why you fight for things. So I think it's a really beautiful piece to just remind us all of our humanity and that we matter.
This is Dee. I hope that people will take away, much like when, younger girls or women look at the TV screen and see Kamala on it, that they, feel like they can accomplish things also, that they're not limited by their gender, their race, or anything. I hope that this reinforces that for them. I think it will. I know it will, because it's an extremely beautiful and strong piece. So I think I know that they will. But I also hope that people take a renewal of spirit, because there's just been so much that could potentially bring you down about this entire process. And I hope that they walk away feeling like I can make a change, I can make a difference, and that I don't think it's safe to use this, but I am somebody, you know, that I'll get it, you know, I'll get it done, and I'll do what I need to do to get things done. So I truly think that they will.
Yeah, it's hard to follow Hanada and Demetria because they're so brilliant and articulate, and Rachel as well. I think that one thing, the fact that we are not able to do this in the theater is a big deal. And the fact that we're still creating is a big deal. That it doesn't stop us, it doesn't stop artists from creating and telling stories that are important and bringing to the forefront women who are important that we have forgotten or never knew about. And so it feels important, especially for the young girls of color who don't think that they matter, who don't think that they are, or the single moms out there, or the wives, or the whoever, female identifying, who don't think that they matter. And then you have these women coming up here and saying, actually, your voice matters. Actually, you're important to the story. And so much so that even after you died, we're going to tell your story so people will know about you. In a time when we need to hear these stories of women, because we're having too much conversation around, for instance, men telling women what they should do with their bodies, right? Making women invisible to the point where other women are also dismissing women because they buy into that conversation or that dialogue, whatever that is, that gets in the way of their wisdom voice. So I think what I hope is that when people see this, that they go, wow, either I need to rethink some things or right on. Yeah. And that they feel less worried about the future and more hopeful. That's what I think.
Hi, this is Rachel Lynette. I am... they've all said all the great things. I shouldn't have waited to go last. I should have got in there first. So I guess yes and to everything that's been said, but something that I think been thinking about lately is that history and change are not a straight line. And I think that sometimes it zigzags and sometimes it bounces back, but that doesn't mean it's impossible to move forward. And that's something I've had to keep reminding myself a lot. And one of the characters in the play is like, I was fighting this in the early 1900s. Why are we still fighting this now? And it just, when I wrote it, I was feeling really disheartened. And now when I hear it, it's actually really uplifting of like, yeah, we're still fighting the same like button issues, but the way that we're fighting them, the tools that we have drastically changed. And the things that we're able to do, progress has still happened. It's easy to dismiss the progress that's happened because we feel like it's not big enough or grand enough, especially when people, a lot of my friends specifically talk about Kamala, it's like, this isn't enough. And it's like, no, but that's because you're expecting progress and change to be the straight, always up line, and it needs to zigzag. And that's important for all of us to carry as many people as it swoops down and back up. And so that's kind of how I've been thinking about it too, is that just always remembering that once they see this play, I hope people remember that change and progress zigzags sometimes, but we're still moving forward.
Beautifully said, ladies. I'm really, really quite moved. Yes. Humanity's shared experiences, the possibility for making change, and there is hope in all of these things. We are moving forward together. It might not always seem like it, but we are. So thank you for highlighting that. That's really, really beautiful way to end our time together. So I want to thank you all so much for your time and talents. And we are so excited to open Letters to Kamala, officially premiering on October 21st. I hope everyone out there will join us. And Mia, Dee, Renata, Rachel, thank you so much.
Thank you, Kristen. Thank you, American Stage.
Yes.
Thank you for joining Spotlight, the American Stage podcast. For more American Stage programs and news, visit americanstage.org.